Welcome to Try Not to Blink. Today's show is going to reveal a secret on how to hire your best new employee. Then we'll pull back the curtains with Dr. Morrison's superstar technician, Irene, to talk about the hard truths needed to run a smooth and efficient clinic. She is going to give her top three tips on being able to work in harmony with your tech team. And then we'll discuss how to inspire a team to be the best versions of themselves, plus the consequences of what comes with that.
I think that trust is like my biggest thing with any type of clinician that I meet or anyone in the health field. Because at the end of the day, I don't know everything and I expect that they know way more than me. So when I feel that peace of mind and they know they're taking care of my best interests, that's huge.
We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible. Makers of stellar gas permeable lenses and the incredible custom stable scleral lens. I'm your host, Roya Habibi, and joining me is Sheila Morrison. Sheila, let's do this.
Let's go.
This topic today we have is super fun. Pure Sheila Roya, like coordination. Sheila just messages me basically yesterday. In fact, it was yesterday and said, let's do this tomorrow. And I was like, yes, I'm so inspired by this conversation. Let's do this. So we've put together a really good conversation that you guys are going to love. But as we were preparing this morning, we realized how many other things, like this is clearly a trending topic in general, right? Staff and how to work together with your staff and how to make your life easier with your staff, right?
Totally.
It's insane.
Like, I mean, if that component doesn't happen in a clinic, everything falls apart. We've been through this really in like cycles. It does. And it's every single day, every day we have to take care of this because I mean, day in, day out, who are the ones that, you know, are honestly the ones that kind of make it all happen?
Totally.
It is really sad if when we have, you know, the every office faces turnover sometimes, right? And so it's really when you think about productivity in the clinic that comes down to dollars, comes down to how do you feel at the end of the day? Are you totally wiped out? Were you able to keep everybody happy? Did you feel like you were hanging on by like a thin, thin thread? You know, those days that are good versus bad. I definitely, if I'm paying attention, there is a direct correlation that is 100% related to the team. And
100%.
What is our supporting staff doing? How's their energy? It's really clear as day if somebody, we're all human, we all have days that are ups and downs. And, you know, it'd be nice to think that in a perfect world, everybody's just, you know, on their game every single day of their lives. I know I'm not. Some days my energy is a little different. And you feel that when the team is kind of doesn't have that. When the energy goes up and down, I'm really energy driven, like intuitive, feely. I can tell when somebody.
You know.
Yeah. So human connection and that kind of like intuition or like social intelligence is really, really important to me. And so it's like,
totally.
I can feel it walking in the door some days when it's, you know, this is maybe going to be a day that I'm going to have to do a little more for myself because I
totally.
Can see what's coming here. Yeah.
Totally. Well, I mean, even right now, so in starting a practice, we all want to focus on the medical things and the medical things are like fun and, you know, sexy to talk about, but we cannot survive in any practice. It doesn't need to be private practice, any practice without our team. And even like just to talk microscopically about my clinic here, it's like I was gone for several weeks recently dealing with some stuff and I came back and realized so much. And they did an amazing job managing the clinic, but your team as a core just needs to be on the same page. Otherwise, all these just little things start cropping up. And so our job is truly being the leader of our team. And if you're not the leader of your team, it is just things just don't happen the same way. And so your energy really does need to drive the team. And you really need to be an understanding of what's going on and what everyone's roles are and being able to communicate and teach. Like, one thing I find is that sometimes I'll get frustrated. Someone's trying to fix something or deal with something or, you know, respond to a patient. And it's like, scooch over. Let me just do this really quickly, right? Like you fixing the problem. But you being able to teach your team to do something for you the way you would do it, it definitely takes at least triple the time to do that. But once that's done, the repercussions of that are so good. Right? So you really do have to have the patience to teach. Even if you're not in academia, you need to have the patience to teach your team how you like things done so that your future days can be easier.
Rhea, you have really kind of catapulted into like a full-on leadership position professionally. And you were always a leader in everything that I've ever seen you do. But being a practice owner in Costa Rica, you've got a whole different kind of set of responsibilities now. What do you think makes a good leader? Talking about leadership.
Oh my gosh, patience for sure.
Patience, okay.
Patience. Oh my gosh, I don't know. Patience, and I think you also, one thing I'll say Patrick does as an amazing leader is he does walk in with like big, bold energy regularly. So that almost always people know exactly what his mood is. And it works on the flip side too, because when he's upset about something, there's not a question that he's upset. You know what I'm saying? Like you always yes. kind of know where you stand with him. And he's also like extremely unafraid to confront a problem. Like opposite of me. I would rather skirt around the problem and just teach, you know, like try and do some things a little bit indirectly, which may not be the best approach, but he would rather just head on deal with the problem right away, confrontationally in a sense, but I mean, not like mean, but like deal with the problem right away, then it's allow business, something right? to, of course yeah, it's a business, yeah. but they're still humans and yeah, you still yeah. feel bad. Right. Yeah, so like, yeah. I would rather understand, I mean, I'm not saying his way or my way is better or worse, but I kind of wish I could have a little more of his, you know, directness when it comes to a problem, but so, he has his tact in being able to approach it. Let's just say someone keeps, you know, doing the same mistake. He would rather just head on say, you keep doing the same mistake. I'm here because I care about you and I want you to fix this. So let's fix this. As opposed to me, I might see them doing the same mistake and I might hover a little, try to catch them in the mistake, critique them at the time, like kind of like training a dog.
So so we have patience. And then now we have also, this is actually a great point in leadership is pulling the right team together in leadership, the right leadership
yes.
team. So where maybe there's totally. Things that you're not necessarily strong point or whatever it is or whatever, you know, whatever the needs are, you got to figure yes. out a way to deliver them. And leadership also means pulling the right leadership team together. Okay. Number three.
That is hard, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Knowing, I think honestly, if you just listen to anyone in practice, especially private practice owners talk, almost everyone these days, especially post COVID, talk about how hard it is to have a good team. Mm-hmm. But actually, even just end of February, there was a really nice short article, I'll link it, from Primary Care Optometry News that said, good workers in your community could be your future staff members. So Dr. Bynum, which is the owner of Northwest Tennessee Eye Clinic, compared an eye clinic to a pit crew. He said,
to a what?
A pit crew, like for racing cars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you know, I actually had, there's this, that's so funny. I don't obviously care too well. I mean, you know this, but I am not a big car person. It doesn't impress me to go to F1. And I actually put it, have you seen the Netflix show that has it on there? Like the, I forget what it's called. It was thrilling.
Formula One.
Yes.
The Formula One thing.
Yeah, well, yes,
yeah, I heard probably. It's amazing.
It's actually pretty, pretty cool. So, okay, continue.
Well, she said instead of, she says, I challenge
so I
you instead of waiting.
I saw it yesterday.
She said, you need everyone doing their particular role. Yes. Otherwise, you can't get back on track quickly, right?
Right.
There's a little bit more literal conversation. You can go read it if you want, or statement, I should say. But she says, I challenge you instead of waiting for someone to send you a resume and look into your community. So instead of waiting, look into your community and observe people who do a good job at their craft. So she calls us poaching, or actually another person in the, Tanya Reynoldson, she said this is poaching, but basically Bynum had gone through the drive-through at her bank and she said the teller there had always taken really good care of her. Eventually she offered her a job and came to work for her. Right. So she's giving other examples of someone who is just like very good at follow through or whatever characteristic that you like. If you notice they're just a good worker, dedicated person, sometimes those are the hard things to train versus someone coming to you, you have a little less say, or you don't really know how they perform or whatever. If you see a barista doing an amazing job, it might be worth saying, hey, do you want to work in eye care? Would you like to work for me at my practice? I think it's an amazing job.
I think that's
an amazing idea.
It's a great strategy. We all can present a version of ourselves when we're trying to get a job, or, you know, not to say a lot of those, you know, applicants are, and we all are authentic and genuine in the things we're trying to do when we apply somewhere. But the reality is, like, what better way to pick somebody off than just walk right in when they don't give a rat's anything about, aside from whatever their job is or whatever, you know, you're not their employer, potential employer, and just kind of see how things go on a natural basis. And also maybe even like witness like how somebody's managing in that's really useful to optometry is how is somebody functioning under a fast, high stress environment, whatever, you know, if you see, like you said, the barista example, see somebody flipping 100 different things, being kind as they do it and really, really good at what they're up to. I think it's a great strategy.
I love that.
They nailed the poaching thing. I think that's really smart, actually.
No joke. I worked at Nordstrom back when I was in high school. Well,
what'd you
high
do
school,
there?
College.
Like clothes, makeup, everything?
I worked in the fashion jewelry department. Honestly, Nordstrom was an amazing company to work for.
I've heard that before.
You so much great stuff like how to manage customers.
Yes.
They have this policy that you are not, the customer is never wrong.
Yeah.
And almost every store that they have this like old tire up in the like staff area just to prove that their customer service is so amazing. So like, apparently the story is someone tried to return a tire to them. They've never sold tires, like not a single store that they ever had has sold tires, but they took back the return to prove that they would just rather make a customer happy. You can like customers end up getting strikes. There is a strike program that patients don't understand.
Totally.
That if you just kind of like are abusing the system, you will eventually get asked to not come back. But they would rather you just have this extremely easy experience. Anything you buy, you know that your investment is protected.
Yeah.
So that you will keep spending money with them. And it's totally true. Like people are pretty loyal to Nordstrom. Their true clients are loyal to.
Costco is known for that too. You know?
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
You bring anything
like
back,
you know,
like
I'm
going
to buy something. Yeah. It's breaks. I don't have to worry that I spent a lot of money. They're going to take care of me.
Totally.
So anyways, I was working at Nordstrom. My normal, I would always work during holidays of, especially Christmas, or sorry, in college. So I would come back and work holidays. And this guy comes up to me one day and says, this is terrible now saying this out loud is embarrassing, but he's like, I have a, basically like a trunk show, but for, fur coats. So I'm like a freshman in college. And he's like, I want you to help me work for 2 days at this trunk show selling fur. I'd never sold fur. I didn't know what that meant, but he just like saw me doing a good job selling fake jewelry, right? And so he hired me. I made like $8,000 in a couple days. And it's just a perfect example. He just saw some aspect and he was like, hey, come help me. And I did. And look at that. So you can do this.
You just reminded me of that happened to me one time. I don't know. I forgot that this happened. Same thing. I was working, I think at the time at an art gallery as like limited edition, you know, like if any Canadians know Robert Bateman. So it was like, you know, medium, like nice. And somebody came in and asked me if I would do, I guess it's a version of a trunk show, but like a seasonal 2 week stint selling snowmobile suits at Costco for a pop-up and it was commission based and I made a small fortune and they're like, you'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Do you have time to do this? I'm like, well,
yeah,
I guess. And they're like, trust me, you'll do great. And it's going to make you money. I just said, sure, why not? I was in my 20s. I did it. It was a blast. And I killed it. I absolutely killed it.
Maybe you'll inspire someone to do something in the future, right? Maybe you'll inspire someone like our guest.
We are so excited to welcome Irene Daniel, an extra special guest. She is an all-star, rock star technician at our clinic at Mission Eye Care here in Calgary. But she also, sadly for us, will be departing in the fall to start optometry school actually at Pacific.
Woot.
So woohoo. So Irene did her undergrad at the University of Calgary, where she had a very good academic record, graduating first in her class with honors. Over the years, she's been a participant in many different types of environments related to research studies. She's worked as a volunteer for Kids Help Phone, which we're going to talk a little bit about. We have some questions about it. A variety of different research and volunteer experiences. So Irene, welcome to the show. We're really excited to hang with you today. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
It was pretty short notice, Roy. I don't know if you know this, but you know, we did have a cancellation at one point in our schedule. And so, you know, this week it's on me to make sure that we're have the roster lined up with, you know, heavy hitting, amazing guests. And Irene was like a last minute, hey, had this idea. We really want to talk to you to learn, you know, about you and also learn what can we do as optometrists to make our staff stay? What do we do to kind of make or break? So that's kind of the direction that we're going to go with this today.
Honestly, we've sort of been in the past, you know, since the new year, doing a lot of things just to like, you know, make ourselves better in eye care. And nothing, in my opinion, could be more true to that than the, at least in my daily life, the keystone player of an ophthalmic tech. Like, it just makes your day better when you have a rock star technician by your side, like right-hand woman, man, whoever it is. But yeah. I think I'm really excited about this because I totally love the idea. And for any doctors that are thinking about getting a technician or whether you have a couple or whatever it might be, I think this is an awesome conversation on how to like work together great and really just make your day better. Because I'll say too, like a throw up, a shout out to back when I was in Seattle, Hannah Smith was my technician and well, one of the main ones that I worked with at the very end. And she just like made my day amazing. And when she wasn't there, I was devastated all the time that she didn't come, like whenever she wouldn't come or something was up. Totally. And it just was devastating to me. So it can make your day so great. And they can just be your best ally, making your job better, et cetera. So anyways.
Well, I always say anytime, I'm always advocate, like anytime you've heard, probably heard this before, maybe like from any lecturer, who are our, honestly, the glue that holds it all together.
Totally.
You know, first encounter, most time spent, you know, they can be our little sneaky little spies trying to getting yes. inside info to give us a heads up so we look good when we actually get in there with the patient. And they take a lot of hits for that. So I'm really excited to dig into this more. Irene, first though, we want to hear a little bit about you. So where are you from? I know you obviously you're in Calgary now, but tell us about your path that it take that you took from kind of growing up and then now all the way into this exciting point of starting optometry school.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. I feel like in Canada, we don't really talk about optometry very much. So I really didn't know anything about it before kind of starting up at this clinic. I knew I wanted to do something in patient care and just learn more about health and science and kind of putting it all together. And then I started working here and it was like all the stars aligned at the same time. I was like, this is amazing. You get to, you know, work with some really cool people, learn some really cool things. And you just get to build these relationships with the patients that I've never really been able to do in anything else that I've ever done before. And so it was kind of just great because I was like, it just happened to be that I got to learn from, again, really amazing doctors and new technology and new things every single day that just got me really excited and made me really passionate about, you know, the stuff that we do for patients and just to see what else I could do. So I'm really thankful for all the opportunities I've had to get to this point here. Like Dr. Morrison said, I kind of did research and I tried out, you know, different aspects of health and the ways that I could contribute to it. And I felt like this was one of the first times where, you know, everything kind of came together and it was just super, super exciting and super rewarding.
Irene, I'm really excited. Is your favorite thing, like your favorite patient encounter? Like what are maybe one or two, it doesn't have to be only one, but like, what do you love working with patient wise? It could be a type of person or a disease type or whatever.
I think when a patient comes in, never having worn custom lenses before, and they have, you know, kind of the need for it. And even just with our fitting lenses, that first lens goes in and they're just like, oh my goodness, they can see in a way that they've never seen before. And it's just, it's a lot. Cause I mean, they haven't had that in ages and they're amazed. And it's just like a reminder that, you know, it's huge what we can do for people. And just with specialty lenses and the new technology, and then just the expertise that is in the field and again, it's not something that you always think about. So it's just so rewarding and just so amazing to kind of walk through that with the patient and just to say, hey, I got to help make this experience a little bit more positive for this person, because it's definitely scary when you have this brand new process and this new type of lens that's going into your eyes.
Absolutely.
So just super cool.
Let's talk about, how do we use, to give a little bit of feedback in our clinic, we use our technicians for almost everything.
I was literally just going to ask that. Let me ask my question.
I know, you and I go on the same brainwave. Go.
Tell me how you and Irene work together, Dr. Morrison. Like, how do you actually, where do you, play by play, I walk in as a patient, where do I see you, Irene? Where do I see you, Sheila? Like, how does that play out? What part is each person involved in? How do you utilize? Well,
so Irene is so, like, we have so different. So front desk patient walks in, gets all everything updated at the front desk. Everything's all in order. Buzz out. Patient's ready to go. Techs have easily at any time. You know, there's, I mean, Irene, how many people are waiting sometimes for a technician to come pick them up at a time at our clinic?
72.
A couple at a time. And sometimes we're juggling.
Yeah. So then we have four doctors some days. And so, I don't know, does that mean there's sometimes easily eight patients waiting to be taken back with, you know, three, four techs kind of trying to figure out how to map it out?
Yeah, there absolutely could be.
I love this because it reminds me just actually sitting down and realizing this, because in our own little bubble, Roya, it's like, I'm the only child. There can't be anything other than my patient. Why isn't this patient ready?
Exactly.
Where is everybody?
100%. So why am I not doing anything?
Yeah, it's like ding, ding, ding. So anyways, then if you actually look at the schedule and it's that grid, and I feel like you probably got a taste of this more so in, and I want to hear about how you're using your techs too, Roya, but we then will have, so then at this point, let's just say, you know.
So tech brings the patient back. What do they usually do?
Irene, this take it on. What do you guys do back there?
Yeah, tell me what you do first thing you do.
So I think it's a little bit of a dance to figure out where I can be and where everyone else needs to be at the same time. So it's really kind of getting on the same page as all the other techs and staff as well. So I'll take my patient back to, you know, whichever room I need to get all the measurements done, to have that conversation, to figure out what's kind of needing to be done in the appointment, to get any of their concerns down, all of that. And then eventually we get to that doctor's exam room. And once we're in there, again, finish up any of those things, get all of what we can set up for the doctor. So when they come in there, everything's ready to go.
So not to get particular.
And then at that point.
So you're doing chief complaint, HPI, you're doing all the health intake form. Then you're doing checking VA, check, like, give me specifics. I want to hear it. How much of the chart are you filling out? I want all our listeners to see how you can. Yeah. You said some of the testing. So you're doing topography, what other things do you do?
Yeah. So if it's an eye exam, we've got everything from, you know, our autorefractor lensometry when that's needed, checking the pressures, getting those optos and fundus scans. You know, we do additional measurements, looking at the nerves and OCT scans as well. We've gotten NeuroLens in our clinic. So we do have the virtual reality headsets for that. So we run patients through that when that's relevant. We'll do VAs here and there as needed. I know doctors have kind of taken up on that a little bit more just as our times have been stretched as well. So we do all of that for eye exams, get them in the room. When something like keratoconus comes up, or when we see that we do need those kind of maps and topographies done, we'll, you know, add that in. Any additional scans that doctors have requested from previous visits, all of that's kind of being pulled in. And so it's kind of a dance to figure out which rooms I need to go to get what I need done, but also make sure that the other patients that the other technicians are with are also able to kind of get into the rooms that they need. And then to get them into the doctor's room and make sure that everything's still staying on track and things like that as well.
So then goes into the room, maybe you check vision, maybe not. And then Sheila, are you doing the entire test, the entire exam then?
Yeah, so it depends. So like a routine eye exam, then we pop in and do all the, you know, slit lamp, whatever it is that's needed on the doctor end. But basically, I always walk in though, because they do so much heavy lifting on the tech side and everything is entered in, that you get to walk in and say, this is the fun part where we dig through all of the hard work that our technicians have already done so that you and I can get to know each other and make it plan.
Yep.
And so that's where it's more just interpreting everything at that point, aside from those like skills behind the slit lamp or with microscopes or whatever else.
So another particular question, but do you do manifest refraction? Who does the manifest refraction? Because you got the AR. Okay.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, yeah. They put it all in though. So there's like, depending on what the patient's there for, everything will be in the phoropter ready to go for us. But we do. What about you? Do you guys, well, what about CF? Okay, so it's different settings, Roya, Seattle versus where you are now. Do you do refraction?
So in Seattle, I was in a group with ophthalmology. And so it was crazy because in the beginning, I was like very resistant to this idea. And then by the end, I was like, well, I'll this just say great. What we do. So basically, we had our technicians do everything up to dilating. So they would check vision, check pupils, check EOMs, check visual field, you know, confrontation visual field. They would check, did I say IOP already? Check IOP.
Sure did.
They would do manifest refraction. And then they usually would put drops in. And then you come in. I would come in as they were dilating, basically, depending on if I wanted them to be not dilated. Like if there was any reason, they might have me come in before. But honestly, I got to the point where I usually didn't need to see them before drops went in.
Exactly.
So it definitely just in the beginning, I was like, how are you checking angles? You know, you shouldn't be putting drops in without checking angles really thoroughly. Or how are you? I want to make sure I check all my manifest refractions. And then by the end, once you work closely enough with someone and you really understand their refracting skills, then it's actually kind of nice to have someone refract and then you check. I always like to check refraction wet, so refraction after dilation, just to see of any over refraction or whatever, do any fine tuning I wanted to do. But yeah, most of the time I went in and just had everything, so then it was really more of a conversation. So
exactly. Here's an example of a couple of cases that we don't see at all until the very end. So like dilated exams, those people have already usually been through, you know, a full comprehensive at whatever time point or been dilated before or whatever. Obviously, we still always check. Technicians will do eye pressure every day that we're going to put drops in for sure, but we don't go back in and recheck those angles if we're comfortable and we order the dilation, they're booked for it. So I don't see them until everything's done. Imaging, they're dilated, everything's ready to go. So that's an example. Next one that's really cool is our contact lens flow, because we don't have our techs doing refraction with contact lenses, so they don't fit soft lenses in our office. Doctors still do that. I know a lot of offices, some offices do have contact lens technicians that'll kind of take the beginning steps anyways of a soft lens. For specialty, I often do not really spend a whole lot of time with the patient until they already have lenses on. So we'll get all of the workup done. And Irene, can you go through our specialty lens workup? Because this is a fun one.
Yeah. So patients will come into the clinic. We'll get kind of a reading of any glasses they have, any information prior to that. And then we'll start off with doing pachymetry. We'll do corneal topography. We also have a scleral imager topographer sort of measurement that we can do at the clinic as well. And then we'll check their auto refractor, and then we'll be able to see them. And then at that point, the doctors will usually come in, kind of figure out that first starting lens if we're going to go with kind of a trial kit. And as they're about to go in with the patient, we try to kind of get everything prepped and set up so that when they're coming back out with the patient, we're ready to pop that lens in, take a look at the refraction on top of that, as well as to see how it's fitting against the eye. And then from there, the doctors are able to keep going to kind of figure out the next steps for fitting that lens.
So you'll put the lens in for the patient?
Yes, that's right. It is super
everything.
Fun.
It's lovely. So she actually, so for example, Irene and our other contact lens fitters, they know what to do when you know, start with the lens. And actually, we can predict it with profilometry as well, a starting point. So the main thing that that I would do is go and make some decisions, get to know the person in a quick nutshell, look at referral, make sure that we're all aligned in moving forward with a fit, make a quick recommendation of where the direction I think it's going to go, and then I just get out, let the experts do their, let people step in. So Irene is actually trained to, she knows when... So apply lens with fluorescein and knows exactly how to find out with, you know, the fluorescein pattern or with the OCT when to go up or down with the SAG for a starting lens. I don't even see the patient until there's a great starting lens on the eye.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's fun. Honestly, too, I think too many people, especially new doctors, they put a little too much responsibility on themselves. Not to say we should pass everything off for someone else to do, but being able to train your team to help you, first of all, is extremely fun for most technicians, I would say, that are interested in that, because then they get some ownership in the game. number one. And number two, it helps with chair time a little, especially if you have more than one room, to be able to have someone help you do things like getting your first lens or do things like insertion removal training. It really, really helps, because it's just those things really can be a time suck and are very they're hard to plan your schedule around, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we don't, of course, I haven't done a training. I don't spend that time. It's just too much chair time. And honestly, our team is there, but Irene is better than me at it.
Exactly.
You know, working with these families and these kids. And I was there. I was a tech at one point too. And once you get really focused and good at the things that you're doing a lot. And yeah, I would trust, you know, the way that we have our techs trained, I would trust them with anybody. They do a wonderful job. And it's so important because it's money wise too, Roya, as you know, looking at what is the bottom line chair time versus it's not a worthwhile thing to have, you know, spending that hour or two on training a patient when you could be seeing another four patients or whatever it is.
Totally. Well, one thing too I like to do, especially if the training's going a little long, is I will just pop in to save face. Not in a bad way, but sometimes everyone's getting stressed and I'll pop in and be like, oh my God, you guys are doing such a good job. Irene is literally, no one's going to teach you better than her, and then leave again. So that I think that. This encourages everyone.
This is a huge thing that has to be, this is great, Roya, because I think that it's also important. We have our techs pop in and grab us. You know how sometimes patients will fail their trains, right? And have to come back for a second visit, especially in the myopia control clinic. That can kind of sometimes be really discouraging for families. And so same thing, we do the same thing as we'll have a doctor notified and pop in just to kind of like reset. Irene, are there any other occasions where you guys like to pull a doctor in when you're doing training, in particular that come up with patients regularly? Any scenarios that you think are really helpful for us to pop in to help you?
I think especially those kind of more complex eye concerns, if there's ever a patient that's like freaking out because they think they've hurt themselves,
even crying.
If I'm pretty sure they haven't.
Yes.
Again, when they hear from someone else, especially their doctor, they just feel better and they feel more trusting towards us as technicians too. When that doctor vouches for us, Dr. Morrison's amazing at being like, this person's going to be amazing to help you with these skills. And so just giving that trust that they have with the doctor towards the technician too helps a lot.
Totally. There is something I learned when I was back at KCI Institute. He's in charge, or at least he was when I was there, Dr. Winston Chamberlain. He's in charge of the cornea department. And I would hear him do this all the time in the exam room. He would say, you're going to go see Dr. Morrison. She's going to fit your contacts. She is amazing. She's literally the best in the field. Like, I didn't even know this name usually, right? Whoever he was referring to. But he would hype the person up so much that the patient would leave his room so content that he took care of them with this referral. And I think every person, I mean, you would even say it about his front desk, you know, Kathy, she's going to set you up for your LASIK consult. She's so good at coordinating. At hyping up your next person, whoever else is on your team, I think is crucial, because every patient is scared when they have to leave you, especially if they like you, that if you do that, even if the person's, maybe they're a little dull, or maybe, you know, sometimes I'll say, you know, they may not be the smiliest person, but they are amazing, or they may not be the best communicator, but they are amazing, and you will not find a better person, right? Obviously, don't say this if you don't know the person or you don't trust this person, but when you do, it really makes that patient confident that you are really looking out for them.
I love that. And, you know, we get run into actually not infrequently where patients will question occasionally, like, okay, here's a scenario. One of our like key superstars works with Irene, taking care of a patient who had been in contact lenses for years and years and years. Our tech noticed that the patient went straight over to the sink and started like washing off his contacts with water, you know, tap water, putting them straight in his eye. And, you know, of course, these days we really stay away from that because of acanthamoeba and risk of infection. And we really train patients that they're not really to do that. Although back in the day on solution bottles, it would actually say rinse this off with water and apply the lenses. Do you allow patients, by the way, Roy, to rinse off cleaner with sink water?
I do not.
How do you manage?
I do not encourage.
Yeah, how
people.
Do you handle that when you see them? Because to get back to the story, so patient, I'm kind of hearing a little bit of like, maybe not accelerate, but kind of a louder, not louder, you know, they're getting into a conversation that's grumbling a little grumbly. And, you know, I have some, it happens not infrequently where we have to come over around the corner to say, yes, this is actually coming from me. You know, yes. This person is not making up this idea out of their own, you know, goodness of their heart or creative intentions. Like, this is actually, we all work together as a team. And I find that when I say that to patients, that we are a team here, and anything that any of our staff are doing is directly what we have asked them to do according to what is your best management plan from the doctors. They totally stop and they understand because, and I feel bad sometimes. It's not fair. Like, there, sometimes it is a different story of what a patient will say to a staff or technician compared to what they would bring up with the doctor.
Think about the example. I can vividly remember one patient that used to do this all the time, but she was just like so mean and rude or just condescending. And then I'd come in there and she'd just be peachy. It's like, why do you got to do that? Because that's making everyone unhappy. Why do you got to be so rude? Sometimes I had to finally be like, please be nicer to her. She's literally your best advocate. She sits on the phone, calls these insurance companies for like her whole lunch break, and you're going to be rude to her because she didn't call you back at the end of the day when she should have been leaving or whatever it was.
Totally. But she has to go pick up her kids defending, and it's like time to go.
Yeah. Okay. I want to hear some from the trenches. Irene, tell us some things that like maybe some of the doctors with a little less tact or whatever. What are some things that are like pet peeves from a tech's perspective that we should all be aware of and that you'll be aware of going into your future profession as an optometrist?
I think it's really cool, again, when we are all kind of working on the same page, especially on those busy days. It's like, I know when that doctor is going to leave the room, I'm going to be running in there with the next patient. I think it's on days like that where, you know, things like the cleanliness of the room or, you know, a patient's previous lenses kind of being left in there where I'm like, I'm just going to sneak that away and just pop that into my pocket or, you know, run that out really quickly, that sort of thing. So it's really great when on those busier days, you know, even the doctor just being like, this kid dropped Cheerios on the ground and then we'll all rush in to clean that in between, that sort of thing. So on those kind of busier days when it's kind of all hands on deck, it's really, really nice when the doctors are also kind of aware of the space and things like that, because I know they're just trying to get into that next room. And typically we always try to have the room set up for the patients prior to bringing them in because it just looks so much better when that's all being able to be done. But sometimes it's just not possible with just the number of people and the amount of chairs just in the entire space. So
I like that.
That's a good, that's one of the things
sweet. What I'm hearing too is another opportunity. And this is safe space. It's like, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, you know, so what I'm also hearing though, would you say it's a peeve when, if you go in and these crazy days, do like doctors trash the room sometimes?
A little bit. It's usually the fluorescein napkins and then the
fluorescein strips everywhere.
Everywhere. And then there's like the lenses everywhere. And I'm like, okay, I'll just sneak this out while the patient's hanging up their coat. But it would be really, really nice to not need to necessarily do that
general
all the time.
Tidying.
I know it's general tidiness. Or like my favorite thing is when a patient has a cup of water and they've just left it in the room and it's hidden behind the computer or something, and it's very visible to the next patient, but we're like, oh my goodness, that's still sitting there. So it's those little things where I'm like, I'm not going to see that until the very end. So anyone who's in there, if they could just grab that, that would be amazing. Or it's like the pictures that you know, someone's being explained how meibomian glands work or something like that. And there's just kind of a very interesting picture on that screen and the next
patient. Something gross or like that has like a patient identifier or something like that. Okay. So, hey, so on the doctor side, I know that like doctors are often be like, okay, when I come in that room, I want it to be immaculate. We've got to have all the other patient info taken off the screens. We've got to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way to Z. So on our responsibility side, maybe taking stuff off before we exit the room would be helpful for techs on those busy days is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think it's a two-way street with some of that as well.
Because
we're all just trying to get those patients in and make sure they're having a good experience. And that really helps when we know that we're going to walk into a room and it's not going to be an utter disaster. Right. So
don't need a full tidy, but just a small tidy.
No, just the bigger things, the fluorescein strips, the lenses can be there because that's fine. You can tell that, you know, I can put that away in a few seconds. But those bigger things where it's like either a heads up or even if you can just kind of take care of it, makes such a big difference.
Totally. I think too, obviously communication comes into play a little bit, but I'm thinking just as I used to be, I think I've said this for years that I think every single person that enjoys eating at restaurants should work as a waiter at one point in their life. Like, I just think it should be a life requirement because until you work as a waiter or waitress, yeah. Like, you can't come in there and complain about one thing or another, like the food being cold, without knowing that usually it's not the waiter that did that, right? I mean, sometimes it is, but most of the time it's not. So anyways, what are some other things that are just like things that we as a team should be aware of? So cleaning the room, but what's something else that we should be aware of that you just feel like is a big, especially for a new technician, you need to be like, okay, don't do this or it's going to cause problems, or beware of this from this doctor, it's going to cause problems or whatever. I don't know. I'm just trying to like think of other things. We want the tea.
I think it's, especially when we have new staff that are coming on board, it's those little things that the doctors do differently that they do differently that you not only have to teach them, here's how this works, but now this is also how each doctor likes it. And that takes a lot of brain power because, I mean, especially when you're starting and you're new to the field, it's you're just going down a list and then eventually it'll click. But until then, you're just doing the things that someone tells you to do. And so whenever we bring in kind of new technology or a new procedure, there's always a little bit of time when everyone's figuring it out. But sometimes the doctors are all on different pages with that too. So we're really trying to learn what each person wants. But then sometimes we realize months in, every doctor does it differently and we've kind of figured out how to deal with it, but that's probably not the best flow at the end of the day. Also follow-ups and things like that, just having clear instructions is super great. We have our routine things where we know what to do, but it's those extra times where we usually then have to take that extra time in between to go hunt down the doctor and ask them what they want. And so from the patient's perspective, they're like, oh, why is it taking so long? Or why have I been left on this bench halfway through my pretest? So it's kind of those little things where you're like, I'm sorry, that's out of my control, but I need to figure out what to do next.
And then who does the doctor wants more. Who does the patient blame when that happens?
Usually us, but you know, comes with the territory.
All the review goes to a general bucket, right? Like the whole review, but it's all a reflection truly on the doctor, right? The doctor does need to express it's unfortunate because you get the gripes. You get gripes. Like the complaints usually, but still, I think one thing actually, Hannah, my technician had put together for me was like my preferences. Right. So like my preferences for X, Y, and Z, how I liked it to be done, what things I wanted to make sure you always did first, or if vision wasn't X, make sure you do Y and Z first, or whatever it was, like my legitimate preferences, which type of dilating drops I like to use. Having that put together, if you are planning to have a tech team or if you are joining a group that works with technicians, I think that's brilliant because it really does help whether someone needs to sub in for you or is working with you, or if some docs, some offices, they have pools, like a tech pool. So whoever's up next works with you as opposed to a dedicated technician per doctor. So everyone's kind of a little different in that way. But that's a great tip because I think having your preferences up does help because every question you get as a doctor is also pretty disruptive, not because we want it to be disruptive or we're not getting offended, but it does disrupt the flow. So everything you can do to provide information to your technician team helps prevent them having to chase you down also. So I love that tip.
That is a great tip.
Okay. Was that the last of your tea or do you have anything else?
I think the other kind of funny thing is when a patient says, oh, but the doctor said this. And I'm like, oh, okay, let me just go check on that really quickly. Because sometimes the patient has misunderstood, but other times it's like, oh, we are going off script. So those are pretty fun times where I'm like, that's great. Let's keep going with this and give me a second to message someone out so they can hunt down Dr. Morrison and ask her what she was talking about.
True. I know those are hard because how do you communicate that? You say it in your note or, you know, leave a tab or a sticky note or something. Those are the worst ways to communicate. But like there has to be a way when you do want to go off script to communicate that, right?
Absolutely.
That's tricky. What's the best way for doctors to communicate that?
I mean, it's always great when I get to kind of have that handoff with you directly.
Yeah.
But it's more like they'll come back the next day for a med follow-up and they'll be like, oh, but the doctor also said this. And I'm like, I don't have that in my notes, but let me look into that for you. And it's just kind of just a quick, like, I'm on my feet and I will make that flow somehow.
And then luckily we have tech, like if you have the, like you in particular have that emotional intelligence where you can kind of like detective work on the fly and figure it all out. But Roya, you're so right about each time that happens, there is an impact on everyone's schedule and time and everything, because then it's 10 touches on one thing, you know, when it should be just one or two or whatever it is.
100%.
Do you guys think digital? So like, what do you guys think about interactions and exam records and things like that? Like, you know, digital, do you do to-dos for all these patients? Do staff even look at them if we put them in the electronic notes? I mean, I think we do.
Yeah, it's really great when, you know, at the end of the last exam notes, you say, when they come back in a week for this follow-up, we want X, Y, and Z done. Of course. Especially when it's, again, off script. We have our normal, you know, follow-ups for our specialty lenses and even med follow-ups. We have certain procedures that we do, and that's fine. But it's those extra things where you're like, don't do axial length, even though it's been 6 months because of, you know, a reason. Mm-hmm. And just giving us a heads up so that we're not kind of in the room about to do it. And then the patient says, no, but we don't do this because of this. So it's really helpful because it helps them to trust us too. And mm-hmm. and to be able to, you know, trust that what we're doing is going to be what the doctor needs at the end.
Definitely. And useful of their time. They don't want to feel like they're getting charged for extra things, etc. No, I love that. Well, tell me what inspired you, aside from, you know, obviously being a rock star involved in all of Dr. Morrison's amazing clinic, but what inspired you to want to go back to school?
I think it's just been really cool to kind of see, especially as I've been learning more about the clinic, just the impact that the optometrists have in their lives. I personally was a contact lens wearer for almost half my life now. And just things like the myopia clinic where, you know, there's all these options and interventions now, and just the way that science is just growing and all the technology and everything, and just the little ways that you can have that impact in people's lives. Because I think at the end of the day, I mean, a lot of health things, but eyes especially, you just don't have that knowledge as the general public. And being able to, you know, meet a person that you can say, I trust this person to look out for my eyes and my vision needs, even though I might not have that information, that's been personally very impactful. And then just learning more about how I can be a part of that journey as a technician has just made me want to grow more, to kind of be able to take on more responsibility and to one day be the doctor in that situation to help these people. Because it really does come down to that trust, especially if, you know, you've got parents that can see great and then their kid needs glasses and they don't really understand why, or why doing myopia control is important for the long term and things like that. So building that trust and that relationship to say, this is why it's important, because even if some of those things had been around when I was younger, again, I think about how my prescription might have been a little bit lower and things like that too. So it's just been really cool how the personal ties have kind of come in with all those interests and just ways that I think I can help out.
I love that.
Irene, as a you said, as a high minus, from a patient perspective, you've been in the eye clinics mm-hmm. for years and years. What are your top two or three things that you would say as a patient a doctor could do to keep your business?
I think that trust is like my biggest thing with any type of clinician that I meet or anyone in the health field. Because at the end of the day, I don't know everything and I expect that they know way more than me. So when I feel that peace of mind and I know they're taking care of my best interests, that's huge. I actually first came and saw Dr. Morrison because I was wearing contacts all the time, but I was still having trouble with my vision, and they would refract me and they're saying, you can read everything, you can see 20/20. So there was nothing apparently wrong with my vision, but I still wasn't very happy with it. And there was a lot of factors and things like that, but just feeling heard in that situation was really big for me. Because up until then they kept saying, you know, your prescription's fine. And I was like, okay, but I'm still having trouble with reading and in school and things like that. So, just that trust that I was able to build with her and other kind of clinicians, that's kind of been huge. Because once you have that, I don't think you're likely to go anywhere else.
I love that. Feeling heard and trust. Oh man, nailed it for the way the world is these days. Hey guys.
Totally. Actually, yeah. I was talking to one of my uncles the other day, and he was like, you say his doctor had told him, his eye doctor had told him he has needs to go get a glaucoma workup. And he's like, he's just sending me to his buddy so he makes more money. And I was like, That's not how it works in the US. You know that, right? Like, you can't, it's literally illegal if you get a kickback from another clinic to like make money from another clinic from a referral. Like, that's, at least in the US, it's literally illegal. And I mean, maybe you're trying to help your friend out, but I don't know. That's kind of a weird thing to think. But he is not, I don't think he's an outlier for saying that. Like, I think some people do truly feel that, right? They feel like it's a financial thing and not like you actually concerned about their health. You actually concerned that they're going to lose vision. So I think that being able to truly elicit trust, like, oh, I am kind of concerned about how your eye's looking. I think this, if this were me, I would go do this. Like, making them really feel like you're actually worried for them so that that extra step and effort is helpful to them. I don't know. It's just crucial. And honestly, I want to take a second to say, clearly, Dr. Morrison, you're doing an amazing job inspiring your team to want to do more and learn more. And, you know, just listening to Irene talking about eye care and even myopia control, I'm like, dang, I should talk about that more too and be more excited about that too. And I'll never forget, this was when I was in school still. I was part of the private practice club. I went to like many of the little conferences they had. And Amir Koshnevis, who works on the East Coast, he had said at a leadership conference meeting, he said, if you have your team and they are not moving forward or asking to learn, like, those are the type of staff that we should love. And when they do eventually tell you, I am going to go back to school or I am going to do one extra step, like, that is something that we should celebrate. It always is sad because selfishly we want to keep them forever, especially rock stars, but that is sad. But we should celebrate people just wanting to better themselves. And that's because they're seeing people do things better and they want to be like them. So anyways, snaps to that. And I'm so excited for you. So you're starting at Pacific soon.
That's right. Yeah, in August. So very excited for that.
Awesome. What are you the most excited to learn about?
I think I'm just really excited to kind of be somewhere that isn't as dry as Calgary is.
I love
because
that.
Because I, again, wear contacts and I've been realizing my dry eyes are getting worse. So I'm very excited for that on a personal note. But it's been a few years since I was in school. So I'm really excited to kind of jump back into the learning of it. And I think it's just so cool because you have so much firsthand experience now from all the work that we do at the clinic that I'm excited to learn about, you know, what the doctors see and how that all fits together from, you know, a vision and a science perspective. So very excited to put it all together and to learn more.
Very fun.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We couldn't appreciate the feedback more. Those are some great clinical tips for doctors out there to try to keep our staff, keep them from leaving, keep them staying happy, healthy. So we love that feedback. And we look forward to seeing all the things that you do as a new up and coming rising star. I had mentors that always would talk about that, about, you know, when I was doing optometry school and residency, that really saw that bright light and always encouraged it. So Ryan, I hope to continue that energy forward for your generation of optometrists. And we're really excited to see what you do.
Thanks so much.
Well, we have come to the end for today. We want to hear from you. So please reach out to us with your feedback, questions, stories, things you're interested in hearing from us, either through our Instagram or Facebook. And we can't close today's show without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for both making great products and for being amazing people to work with. Be sure to tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.